Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim and I both hope that you celebrated your favorite president yesterday, whether it's Reagan, John Tyler, Calvin Coolidge, Warren G. Harding. I don't know about you, Jim, but it's always a special day for Zachary Taylor for me.
Chester A. Arthur. A key plot point in Die Hard with a Vengeance.
That's exactly right. He gave away one of the spoilers, but if you haven't seen Die Hard 3 by now, it's probably not Jim's fault. Anyway, he's Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, we've got good news, bad news, and crazy news, as always, for conservatives today. We start with the good news, and this news kind of got lost in the shuffle over the President's Day holiday weekend. But according to Rasmussen reports, Americans are remarkably consistent, which is a nice thing to see in comparison to primary voters who pretty much changed their minds on a 180-degree basis every other day. But Americans remarkably consistent in their hatred of Obamacare. According to the latest Rasmussen survey, 53% want it repealed. 50% actually think it's going to happen. Only 38% like it the way it is. So, you know, supposedly, the more we know about it, the more we'll like it. That's not true at all. And with the president pushing unconstitutional issues like the mandates that we saw and perhaps other things coming down the pike, could be a very good issue for the nominee this year. So good job, America.
Just kind of a variation on this. One second. As Rush Limbaugh likes to rattle his papers. This just handed to me, Obamacare still phenomenally unpopular, which is good news for the GOP. And I understand that obviously many listeners out there, many readers of NRO are a little bit concerned that Mitt Romney enacted Romney Care, and Newt Gingrich, and almost every Republican figure at one point or another has kind of thought aloud or expressed some positive noises about the individual mandate in concept. And there's an argument to be made that, look, if you have no health insurance and then you are in some terrible accident, you expect the other people to pay for the health care that you require, then, in the argument as well, making people have health insurance is a way of promoting personal responsibility. You can't get something for nothing. Otherwise it turns into sort of a form of welfare of just, people, not being responsible and the state coming in and paying for whatever they need. However, once we've seen it enacted, as we've seen both in Romney Care and in Obamacare, it ends up with the state having the power to make you do anything. This is not like a car insurance where you need to purchase something for the privilege of driving. I think that, almost everyone would agree that driving is a privilege and not a right. In this case, the individual mandate can very well be seen as putting a fee or tax on breathing, that your right to exist as an American requires you to purchase health insurance. And if the Congress has the authority to mandate that, what don't they have the authority to mandate? That's how you end up with the Obama administration and Health and Human Services Secretary / Empress Sebelius declaring that employers have to provide copay-free birth control to their employees, regardless of whether it violates their moral principles or not. Well, look, I look at that and I think, well, wait, why are employers required to pay for copay-free birth control and not for like annual physicals? Because they're pretty needed too, aren't they? Or vaccinations or anything else. I mean, at that point, why should you be forced to pay anything, particularly something that's been estimated as low as $9 a month? So we are opening the door here to the state regulating everything in the production in our healthcare, completely eliminating consumer choice, completely eliminating any flexibility of employers in these areas. And it is a gargantuan leviathan move that undoubtedly is very unpopular. Fantastic to see that the passion has not faded from this issue. It's entirely possible that Anthony Kennedy will do our work for us and declare this unconstitutional later this year. And that will be interesting to see how that would play in the presidential race. But I don't think any conservative or anyone who's worried about the growth of government should take any of this for granted, that the Supreme Court may go our way. It may not. I think a legislative repeal is the way to go, and signed into law by a Republican president in 2013 is the way to go. And I'd say the Republican candidates just keep beating this drum, including Mitt Romney. Come to the conclusion, even if you are not opposed to individual mandates at the state level, which I think is a distinction without a difference and an unwise move on his part, just keep emphasizing you'll repeal Obamacare. In fact, if you have to tattoo it across your knuckles, do so.
That'd be cool. That would really give him some street cred.
What about concerns? You won't keep your word, Governor Romney. Just have him hold up two fists to the cameras and say, "Right there, read my left one, read my right one." As you can tell, I want to see a lot more combativeness from Romney in the coming weeks.
Yeah, you know, if
he needs to show he can fight outside of the realm of attack ads.
Yeah, if things don't go well in Michigan and Arizona, he may resort to that. So that could be slightly entertaining on as the campaign goes on. But you're right. It's a twin bill of people like their freedom and people hate huge government spending and debt and massive programs. We've already seen how fast Medicare has basically buried us in debt after just half a century. And people see another entitlement coming at exactly the wrong time. And they wised up. They got it right. That led us to a Republican House and hopefully a nice performance all across the board later this year. Speaking of huge debt, Greece is back in the news. But, of course, their debt is almost kind of cute compared to what we're dealing with. The EU just agreed to bail them out again to the tune of $172 billion, which I think is about a year-long payroll tax cut and a half for us. So that's not exactly a huge deal. But one of the things that the EU is really, really, really hoping that they can do is get Greek debt down to 120% of their GDP. Jim, Greece is basically the poster child of insolvency and runaway debt. We're now north of 100% debt compared to GDP. And if you look at the Obama budget in the out years, it ain't getting any better anytime soon.
It is not. And so there's this way on paper, I guess if you're Greece, this is good news. I have to be honest, the idea that if you spend yourself into oblivion, the idea that these, you know, hardworking Germans who actually have a fantastic work ethic and who don't have 35-hour work weeks and who actually have a fantastically productive economy, or at least by European standards, the idea that someone else will come out and save you from yourself and bail you out is not really teaching the very best message that could happen. By the way, it's also worth noting that in every one of these deals, it always seems like Europe comes in and says, okay, we will provide you X amount of funding in exchange for Y amount of austerity measures. And then the Greek parliament decides to vote on the austerity measures, and that's when the Greeks start burning things in the streets. And boy, you know, for some reason, we don't get to see this very much in America. Last week when I was on CNN, they had the live feed from CNN International. And you talk about people throwing Molotov cocktails at police officers and you know, just rioting in the streets. It's kind of fascinating that it's now become almost pro forma in Athens. And we just kind of expect, oh, there they go again. And inevitably, the austerity measures either get, you know, rejected or watered down or you know, there's too much social chaos to enact them. And I think one of the things that Greece is a particularly frightening warning sign for us in America. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking on this program, and I wrote about on Campaign Spot the idea of America becoming the squatter nation or off the books nation. The idea that we, you know, in these long lingering economic hard times, you're seeing more and more Americans working under the table, getting paid under the table. It's a way of eliminating taxes. It's a way of eliminating all kinds of regulations. And I think it's generally bad for workers. I think it's bad for almost everybody. Including, I think, in the long-term employers. Now, Greece has been famous for having an under-the-table economy, of having all kinds of unreported income. And you know, if you reported all of your income, you'd inevitably be put into, you know, poverty by the tax rates there. So the idea of having a significant black market economy is a very bad news for Greece. And I think, you know, the little indicators that we are heading in that direction are very, very ominous. So take a good hard look at Greece, America, because that's what's coming down the pike if we don't change our ways very dramatically.
Exactly. Hopefully Paul Ryan will have a sensible budget proposal. It obviously won't go anywhere this year with the Democrats control the Senate, Obama in the White House, but hopefully we're a year away from a budget that not only makes sense, but will actually be pursued, but be the very tiny first step down a road that we have to go down and we have to go down soon. On to martini number three now. And whenever we have ominous news like the possibility of Obamacare staying implemented or debt looming on the horizon, there's always Vice President Joe Biden to offer a little bit of comic relief, although I guess today it's more his staff than him. But, you know, the vice president keeps a fairly active travel schedule as well. We just don't see it very often, except when he makes one of his classic statements. But it turns out the president is going to a state called Rhode Island. Rhode Island is known to most of us as R-H-O-D-E Island. But according to the vice president's office, it's R-O-A-D Island. Jim, I guess things have changed a little bit up there in the Providence plantations. But if this had happened in the previous administration, you know, it would have been late night fodder for days. But if, you know, Vice President Biden does it, I guess we've just engaged in the soft bigotry of low expectations when it comes to him.
Greg, I will answer this in the form of Vice President Biden. Oh, you smarty pants out there, you know, with your fancy words and stuff. Let me tell you, how exactly do you think the vice president is going to get to that place? He's going to float over the ground? No, he's going to travel on roads. So he will be traveling on a Rhode Island. Now, technically, Rhode Island, the state, is not actually an island. But nonetheless, you know, you bring up a good point. You know, there was the common joke that's almost getting a little cliched now that they told me if I voted for Sarah Palin, I would end up with a fool in the vice presidency. And boy, were they right. This is, you know, the only other lesson we can take from this, and it is true for those of us who write for a living, but I think almost everyone in terms who deals with, you know, electronic communications, with emails, with letters, with filling out forms, spell check does not catch everything, folks. So take the time to take that second look at things. And this is when, you know, probably three listeners will find four typos on campaign spot today to throw back in my face. So we've all been there, but it is a little more humorous when it comes from the official office of the vice president.
Yeah, the only sad part is that Rhode Island will not be a swing state this year. So this will in no way damage the Obama-Biden ticket. But the good news is it's only four electoral votes, which we knew he was going to get anyway. So,
Greg, we're just talking about our stimulus projects. We're turning Rhode Island into a road island.
Roads and bridges. What better place than an island
crumbling
and a road?
Infrastructure. Our ever-crumbling infrastructure.
That's right.
No matter how much we spend, they always come back with the same metaphors.
Oh, Jim. Enjoy the rest of Die Hard 3. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.